Welcome to the Business Results Program. This is how to transform yourself, your team, and your company to perform better and achieve higher results. Let's get started. I'm so happy you're here. My name is Pete Winarski, and I'm the CEO of Win Enterprises LLC. Check out CompleteBusinessTransformation.com and look at the latest posts and resources we put there to serve you. I started this program because I want you to know that it doesn't have to be that hard. Business leaders like you struggle to get results, to build your team, to satisfy customers, to grow your businesses, and to stay sane in the middle of these crazy dynamics going on around you. My team and I have had full careers in business leadership roles, and we get it. We've had the same challenges as you, and we can share what we've learned, and we can make your life easier. In this program, I will be joined by various members of our team and other guests that I know can help you. We will offer new perspectives and share some of the secrets that you're just not hearing about anywhere else. The Business Results Program is your personal journey to improve yourself as you improve your company and achieve your most important goals and deliver the business results that make you and your team happy. Now, let's get to today's episode. Today's guest on Business Results Radio is Michael F. Schein. Michael is a writer, speaker, business owner, and, get this, hype artist. He's the author of The Hype Handbook, 12 Indispensable Success Secrets from the World's Greatest Propagandists, Self-Promoters, Cult Leaders, Mischief Makers, and Boundary Breakers. His articles have appeared in Fortune, Forbes, Inc., Huntington Post, and Psychology Today. He speaks to international audiences and has tons of clients through his agency, Microfame Media. In today's conversation, we dive into the Hype Handbook. The best part of this discussion is that everything we talk about today is actionable, and you can get quick results. Plus, I'm sure you'll enjoy a surprise or two as Michael talks about how he picked fights with some pretty well-known marketers, such as Gary Vee. This interview will make a difference for your business. Enjoy. Hi, everyone. This is Pete Winarski here with Business Results Radio. And today, my guest is Michael F. Schein, the man who is somewhat of a super hype hero. I think I just invented a term, Mike. I'm not sure.
I'm going to use it.
Super hype hero. Just as way of quick bio, you know, his marketing agency is called Microfame Media. So imagine if you are a consultant or an entrepreneur or business leader, and you really want to enjoy the lift that being somewhat of a mini celebrity gets you in terms of exposure for your business, then, you know, Mike, you're the man for that, aren't you?
That's what I aim for. Yeah. That's what they tell me.
I love it. You know, and part of, I was looking at, you've done, we first met, we're doing an article as part of Psychology Today. And I know you've written for not just that magazine, but Forbes and a number of others. And I was looking at one of your bios, I think it was in Forbes, and it was talked about the agency that you worked for that created the VH1 pop-up video. And that, you know, Mike, we used to watch that with the kids and my wife, you know, all this, you know, years ago. Loved the program. So are you the man behind this? Is that the case?
No, not at all. Not at all. I wish I could say I was. First of all, when I tell people, I mean, I'm only 44 years old. So that was like my first job out of college. So I was the man behind the man behind the man behind the man behind the guy who made the sandwiches. you know, but, yeah, I mean, I was a very, very low level. It was my first job, as I said, so I just did whatever, gopher kind of thing. I got to write a few lines for like one episode, but the funny thing about that is, when I used to tell people that, it gave me a lot of leverage. I mean, a lot of the opportunities that opened up for me later people liked hearing that. Now, when I tell people in 2021, soon 2022, I don't know when this is going live, people have no idea, you know, what it is. I mean, you know, because you know, you watched.
Oh yeah, we watched it for sure. Yeah,
but yeah, it's really not. It was so popular, and it just kind of faded from the cultural imagination, which is funny.
Hmm. Yeah, maybe there's a resurgence version that you know, Mike Shine can be behind after.
Yeah,
all.
Maybe. But yeah, so, it was cool. It was a cool first job out of college. It was a really weird, fun environment, but and I learned a lot. But yeah, that was really a long time ago.
Yeah, well, nonetheless, you know, as you said, it brings credibility, and you know, so you know, I'm sitting here at you know 55 years old at the point that this is recorded, so it was in my zone. Today, we're going to talk about the Hype Handbook. I'm just going to, you know, for the short video version of this, you can see it on the screen. If you're listening to the podcast version of this, the book is called The Hype Handbook: 12 Indispensable Success Secrets from the World's Greatest Propagandists, Self-Promoters, Cult Leaders, Mischief Makers, and Boundary Breakers. And I think that title is so perfect. And I could say that because I've flipped through. I haven't read it cover to cover, but I have flipped through the entire book, and I have given it, you know, there are so many popular names in here. People that you would certainly know, and many that I had never heard of. And, you know, you're like a walking encyclopedia of these you know, boundary breakers, so to speak.
Yeah, I mean, I did a lot of research for this book, and the research was almost more fun than the writing. And I started as a writer. These characters are so interesting. And I think what lay at the root of some of this was I would constantly, I mean, you said that I own a marketing agency, and I kind of do, but recently I've been experimenting with calling it not a marketing agency and saying that marketing is maybe not such a great thing, but that hype is a good thing. Because what I would find was, you know, I went into business for myself, you know, I don't know, about 15 years ago or something like that. And when I first did, I was trying to learn how to attract business. And I was a freelance copywriter at the time, and I studied marketing. Mm-hmm. And so I looked at all these, you know, I don't know, search engine optimization and pay per click and sales funnels. And I would read these professional marketing books, and I just couldn't get clients. I would do all the homework. I would do all the stuff. And then I like said, you know, who are the people who really create massive followings and drive massive amounts of emotion and make massive amounts of money? And they almost never call themselves marketers. They almost don't, sometimes they don't even know what marketing is. You talk to some of these band managers, Alice Cooper's band manager, or the founder of a mega church, or, you know, Tony Robbins even, right? And none of these people are like, yes, I am very good at marketing. They're good at hyping stuff up. They're just good at understanding human nature. And I thought that disconnect was pretty profound. I said, I think I'm studying the wrong people. So I started studying these non-marketers who were so much more successful than professional marketers. And I said, is there a system in this? And I call it hype. I mean, I define hype as just any activity that generates a lot of emotion so that you can get people to do what you want them to. And it can be getting them to do bad things. It can be getting them to do good things. But the strategies are the same. So that was sort of the beginning of this quest.
You know, you hear the phrase influencer, and you can, you know, the hype or creating influence or getting people to take the action you want them to take. And in the marketing world, it's obviously related to growing your business. But certainly, you know, as you pointed out, there's, you know, mega church leaders, or, you know, people that have started some giant trend, giant following. And, you know, all of those fall into the categories. I mean, the types of names of people you have in here, you mentioned, you know, Tony Robbins or Richard Branson, or, you know, you've got, you know, Ayn Rand, you mentioned in here, you know, Pussy Riot from the, you know, Russian movement. And, you know, there's, you know, of course, the Alice Cooper story right at the beginning. You know, it's interesting, the difference between marketing. You know, we're a consulting company, but we've started to get away from, you know, calling ourselves, quote unquote, the consulting company, because it doesn't really communicate what we do or how we do it. You know, so we started to say, well, we help companies to blank, and it really fits the conversation that we're having. You know, so results based, So it sounds like from what you described in your researching and experimenting and playing around with getting away from the word marketing and into hype, it's towards the result. You know, I blank, I fill arenas for rock stars or I whatever.
I think that's a big part of it. And at the same time, I think a lot of marketers would tell you, or at least pretend that they were results-based at all. They would show you an Excel spreadsheet that have all their followers and analytics and this and that. So results are part of it. I would also say that a big part of it is starting with the fundamental principles of how we behave in groups, which are often irrational, and then go out and find the way to spread the word instead of starting with the technology and the tactics and the methods. So for example, a marketer might say, let me teach you my process for setting up an email sequence of 10 emails that lead to a sales funnel where you click this link and there's a countdown clock and X number of closes, blah, 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 right? A hype artist might say theatricality is the principle of hype. Every hype artist, whether it's in a conversation like this and just telling theatrical stories or using lights and sound and color, almost all hype artists do that because it overwhelms the senses and it gets people to coalesce in groups and follow the leader. Okay. Mm-hmm. Now, if that's true, let's think of a strategy to playfully and mischievously in a benevolent way capitalize on that. Okay. Well, maybe we tell really funny, we do videos where we're doing reaction videos, you know, to so I'll give you a real life example. Gary Vaynerchuk, who's a great mm-hmm. hype artist, mm-hmm. he realizes very naturally that theatricality is a big part of success, right? So he started his career by creating videos where he would talk about wine, which is what he was selling at the time, in very colorful terms. So he would curse.
Yeah,
he would
colorful indeed,
it, yeah. Yeah, he would compare it to Skittles and Cinnamon Toast Crunch. He would wear a hoodie. He has kind of this loud Long Island accent. It was very theatrical. Mm-hmm. And as a result, he stood out and became this character. Okay, that would have worked whether you were on a stage in 1700 at the Globe Theater or on a street corner with posters in 19th century Paris. But Gary Vaynerchuk said, okay, how do I spread the word, you know, far and wide? Well, I use online video and I use YouTube, right? So a marketer would start with YouTube. They would say, YouTube is a new technology. We need to figure out how to capitalize on this new technology. A hype artist would start with the fact that all human beings are attracted to theatricality. Mm. Now let's find a mechanism to spread that far and wide. And I think in some ways that's the fundamental difference because everyone's trying to get results, you know?
Yeah, that's, I mean, what's really interesting is, highlight a lot about human behavior and, what motivates someone to take action. You know, the way the book is set up, what's really great is in the back of each of these chapters or each principle is, you know, what are some practical tips for what you can do in your business to implement this sort of thing? You're putting it into practice. And, these hype strategies that you lay out here, one of the things I notice, Mike, is that you're pushing the limits, and it's important to find the limit. Cause, you know, in some cases you might look at the reader, whoever reads this, listens to this interview or reads the book will say to themselves, oh, I could see how it works for them, but I couldn't do that. So just comment to that a little bit, because I think that's an important piece of implementing some of these strategies.
I really went out of my way in this book, and I hopefully succeeded at least in part, in using examples that spanned the gamut for all of these to show you that the strategies themselves are not dependent on personality, they're not dependent on morality, and they're not dependent on the type of content or business. That there are these underlying psychological principles that if you're willing to see the world the way it really is, and you filter them through your own moral code, which I strongly suggest you put in place before you start this stuff, that it can be used for anything. And sometimes I would go to extremes. So I give one example in the book where I show how Warren Buffett, who in terms of finance, I would say has probably the most sterling moral reputation of most financiers out there, and Charles Manson used precisely the same underlying hype strategy to, in one case, start a death cult that got national news attention, and in one case, you know, become one of the most respected financial minds of all time. So, you know, I use one example, picking a fight, how that's a big deal, or drawing a line in the sand. And in the beginning, I give examples like Alice Cooper doing these crazy things and getting parents angry. And you might say exactly what you said, I could never do that. But then I give an example of Basecamp, who picked a fight with an idea, Basecamp being a software, a very boring software industry, project management.
Right.
And they picked a fight with the concept of complexity in business and overwork. And in their space, that worked sense. They didn't have to, you know, dress like in costumes like Alice Cooper and do any of that to do that. They wrote, you know, articles and they spoke at conferences. So these things are available to anyone. The people who don't succeed are the people who aren't willing to give it a try, because human beings behave how human beings behave. And whether you like that or not, we're not rational. We behave in a way that helped our ancestors spread their genes.
Right. Well, in context, you know, I think let's just go to the pick a fight concept and dive into that one a little bit. You know, you mentioned Gary Vaynerchuk, and you know, you described in you know, some great detail of how you, in essence, picked a fight. It was really taking a contrarian point of view, knowing that he's got a huge number of followers, and you you know, triggered some emotion as a result. Yeah. And you know, ended up getting quite a few back and forth. So, you know, I remember back, I want you to tell the story in a moment. Let me just have you go there and then I'll continue with what I was thinking.
Well, yeah, I mean, the short version of the story is just that when I was starting out in my career, I had left a corporate job and I was trying to make it as a freelance copywriter. And I thought, because I've always been told that I'm a good writer, a lot of things that I'm not good at, but that's something people have always said I'm good at. You know, there were these opportunities to write white papers and certain kinds of business writing at the time. I could do it well. I thought I'd just make money, right? And I couldn't get clients. I mean, I got a few, but very few. And I had money saved up like about a year's worth. And I was quickly burning through it. And I had an infant daughter at home. It was stressful, to say the least. And I was really trying to become a marketer, as we talked about it. I was reading marketing books, taking marketing courses with money I didn't have and nothing. And so, and it's important to note, I don't think you should troll people and pick fights that you don't believe in. You know, don't go after people's looks just because they have a big audience on Twitter, right? But what I was selling at the time were packages of content, because I was a very efficient writer. And I also knew how to teach companies using blueprints how to create content quickly, right? So I would constantly watch Gary Vaynerchuk, who at the time, for those of your audience who don't know, was sort of the biggest internet guru there was. And I guess he still kind of is. But his whole thing was, he tells mainly young people who idolize him that they need to, in their 20s at least, sacrifice every spare minute. He says, I didn't have a girlfriend. I didn't have fun. I had nothing in my 20s. I worked from morning till midnight, 7 days a week. When I get up in the middle of the night at 3 a.m, I tweet from the toilet. And I heard all this and I was like, you know, this is very silly, because the only person getting rich off of this is Gary. I mean, obviously there's no one who doesn't think you have to work hard to become successful, right? Everyone knows that. But this idea that the smartest way to do internet content creation and marketing is to tweet all day long. I mean, what if you're not selling the wine? What if you're making the wine and trying to make a better wine? So I had an ulterior motive, because I had a more efficient way of accomplishing the same thing that I wanted people to pay me for. So I happened to have a column in Inc. at the time, one of the few successes that I had made happen for myself at that time. And I wrote an article called Why Gary Vaynerchuk is Flat Out Wrong. And I was very respectful. You can find the article online. I didn't insult him. In fact, I was And I believe this. I think I called him a genius. You know, I mean, I said that he was insanely good at what he did, which I believe still. But that the advice he was giving people was misguided, and that it helped him more than it helped the people he was advising, because it created this bond between him and the people. So, you know, that night, not that night, in an hour, Gary Vaynerchuk responded to my article, and he started out very respectful. And at the end, it was weird. I showed it to some people. He was aggravated. He stopped making sense at the end of the thing. He was sort of sweating, you know, talking about how he had enough money to stop working tomorrow, but he didn't because he loved the game, you know, and loved to crush it. And then, and I got nervous because I was like, again, a nobody, and he was Gary Vaynerchuk. And
oh no, what have I done?
Yeah, I sort of thought that I destroyed my career, and I thought that far into the night, because all night long, my Twitter alerts on my phone were going off with all of his young fans, Vaniacs, as they come telling me I was an idiot and I was horrible and I was a lazy person, which was funny because I was working 12 hours a day, you know. But then all these other people started following me and saying that they really appreciated my take. And what I found out was that by putting myself against this dominant narrative out there, there were all these other people out there. He has his followers who are never going to change, but there's all these other people out there who probably thought similarly or felt insecure that they didn't do things the way Gary did.
And they didn't have a leak. Do I really need to tweet from the toilet, right?
Yeah. But you know, just the idea that like, yeah, I'm not sacrificing my health and my sleep and my this, and, you know, maybe that's why I'm not as rich as I thought I should could be, you know, and this. And when they see someone like me, suddenly they have a leader. There's like a doctor with a white coat telling them that everything's okay. And they started to coalesce around me. And it wasn't done consciously. It was sort of just something I did. Mm-hmm. But I'm a big fan of experimentation. And I said, wow, that outperformed anything I've ever done in terms mm-hmm. of getting attention, like 300-1, you know? So what is going on there? So I started to get very interested in those dynamics around that point.
Yeah. And I love that word experiment and being an experimenter and trying it out, seeing what it works. And, you know, I imagine the strategies that you ended up really drafting and writing about here are a combination of things that you tried and discovered worked. Yes. And then I'm guessing research to dig in, well, why does this work and who else is doing it?
It works in both directions. So one way is exactly what you said. I'll do something and then I'll say, why does this work? Also, what I've come to do is I read about these kinds of people and I'll even read books on crowd psychology and things like that. And I'll take notes and then I'll say, okay, I'm seeing patterns here. There's obviously some sort of dynamic because people keep using it. Is there an experiment I can run or a gambit I can do based on that hype strategy or that principle that I can try? And then I try it on a very small scale. And, you know, 5 out of 7 times, it nothing comes of it. And I shut it down very quickly. But then those 2 times, then I say, okay, I can put more chips on that square. Mm-hmm. So it happens in both directions. I think it's sort of like a feedback loop, a positive feedback loop.
Yeah. So that was, you know, we just really talked about one of the strategies, which was pick a fight. And that was, you know, in your example, the fight was with a name, Gary V, but also the idea behind what he's was all about. You also talked about, you know, the taking a concept and, you know, rallying people for or against the concept, and, you know, the filling Wembley for Alice Cooper you know, really an impressive and fun story of, you know, the picking a fight with the parents and ending up selling tickets like crazy to the kids.
Yeah, you know, at the time in the 70s when Alice Cooper was at his peak, their manager, who was, anyone should go out and study him if they want to learn about, you know, how to promote themselves, because he was a genius. He even started the celebrity chef movement as well. His name was Shep Gordon. At the time, in the 70s, rock had begun to become taken seriously, quote unquote, right? Like it went from this like fun, she loves you, yeah, yeah, kind of thing to this like Pink Floyd staring at your feet, making art. And Alice Cooper was very theatrical, right? And they were very over the top. So Shep Gordon said, you know, all these bands are trying to get on the cover of Rolling Stone. They're trying to be taken seriously for their art. But there comes a point in every person's life where they need to separate themselves from their parents. So what if instead of trying to get on the cover of Rolling Stone, we tried to get on the cover of Newsweek about how horrible we are? Let's get on the cover of Newsweek, you know, that parents read, or whatever, the Washington Post, about this is a menace to society. Because if parents hate Alice Cooper, kids will love them because they'll define themselves against what their parents hate. And that's such a chess playing maneuver. That's so clever, thinking that many steps ahead, that instead of trying to actively promote your artist, you're trying to actively anti-promote your artist to a different audience so that another audience will form around them. So that's like high hype. I mean, if you can think strategically like that, that's what to aim for.
Well, and there's, you know, that there's tribe building that's going on. I'm kind of mixing some of your strategies here. Yeah. This conversation is meant to be a conversation, not an itemization of the 12.
No, so and they are all connected. I mean, the lines I draw between them, while there are lines, are also fuzzy lines. They're arbitrary. I mean, this stuff flows in and out of each other.
Right. Well, talk about a tribe.
You know, I'm certainly not the first person to talk about a tribe, and that's actually part of this exact, I think I talked about it in the same chapter. The idea is that we form tribes. Humans are tribal, just like chimpanzees. And I think what makes humans different than chimpanzees is that while chimpanzees can band together to fight against other tribes and that sort of thing, human beings are simultaneously the best organism in existence at collaborating with people they perceive to be like them under some arbitrary designation, whether it's skin color, which is the amount of melanin in your skin, or what sports team you like. You know, these are all pretty arbitrary designations, and we can cooperate with people to build countries and nations and skyscrapers around this, churches. And we're also good at hating and driving away people under the same arbitrary designations. So while that sounds like an awful facet of human nature, and it probably is in a lot of ways, it can be re-harnessed for good, because the other doesn't have to be people of different races or religions or whatever arbitrary thing it can be. It can be, you know, somebody who believes that project management should have fewer features in their tools, not more features. You know, you can just like sports teams, people get crazy about their sport team, but at the end of the day, you'll have a beer with the other people, you know, who like other sports teams. You can harness this tendency to build tribes very positively. And you know, I talk about this in the book, and I think this influenced me a lot. When I was growing up, I was really into punk music. And you know, at 44 years old, what I realize is, and you probably remember something similar, music was a real marker of your tribe at that time. So you were a punk, you were into metal, you were a hip hop person, you were, right? And it's not so much like that anymore. I mean, with Spotify, people just listen to anything. But what does it matter? I just remember being so convinced that people who liked the right kind of music were the right kind of people. You know what I mean? And other people were cheesy and lame and that kind of thing.
I'm going to hang with you. Yes.
Yeah. And so I think that we see that with politics, unfortunately, now quite a bit. So there are ways, though, if you can be anti an idea in your space or set of ideas or point of view, people will be attracted to you very heavily. So if you can ask yourself the question, what's a common point of view in my industry that I really disagree with, and then proudly trumpet that you disagree with that idea, you'll find that people will follow you. And in business, especially if you're not selling sheet metal, if you're selling something that's idea-based, like consulting, if they follow you, it's only a matter of time before they start opening their wallets to you.
Well, that's exactly why we're here, you know, in terms of, you know, business leaders and entrepreneurs and consultants and, you know, those who are really trying to get their message out is to, yes, you want to end up making money in the process, but really it's about how many people, how many businesses can I impact And as you started out your career, you said, I'm helping a handful of people, but I need to help a lot more.
Yeah.
And then you turned on a strategy and there it was, there it worked.
That's right.
Yeah. So, you've hinted at a few times where this is, in essence, it's like a superpower that you could use for good, or you could use for not good. I won't say evil, but not good. And you use the phrase moral manipulation. So just, you know, talk about that a little bit, because I know that there's certainly, unfortunately, some examples like you talked about Charlie Manson and, you know, created his death cult, right? So where's the moral and the moral manipulation to these messages?
So I wrestled for a while about whether to write this book, because I knew I wanted to, but I didn't want to be one of those people who puts something out into the world who's going to make people's lives worse just because it was good for me. And if I was going to write this book, the Hype Handbook, that was giving away ways to, you know, get people worked up into a frenzy so that they'll do things they wouldn't normally otherwise do, and that was being applied toward negative aims, I would have been really unhappy with myself. Mm-hmm. That wasn't what I had left my corporate job to go do in the world.
Right.
But I became convinced, truly, truly convinced, that it would have been immoral not to write this book. And that may seem like hyperbole, not to use a pun, you know, but it is. And I'll tell you why. I did some research about people with antisocial personality disorder. So that's that sort of basket of personality disorders that include sociopathy and psychopathy and extreme narcissism. So they're people that are very comfortable using people to their own ends, and usually to negative ends, because it's selfish, and sometimes they like chaos for its own sake, and whatever, right? Charles Manson would be at the far extreme of that kind of personality type. Sometimes it does come from abuse. He was abused, right? And they've done laboratory experiments with people with this disorder where they've put them in situations where they were put under interpersonal stress, like they manufactured interpersonal stress. And someone without a personality disorder, your heart rate goes up, your pulse goes up, your breathing gets shallower. These people experience none of those responses. So what that tells me is that the dark side, or not the dark side of that, the interesting side to that, is that narcissists, sociopaths, and psychopaths see the world as more accurately than the rest of us. They can view an interpersonal human situation, and most of us, when we want to get what we want out of a situation, well, I shouldn't do that, that would be uncomfortable, you know, my heart rate's going up, they'll just do it. They see people like chess pieces. So what I realized was, it's not so much that these strategies are evil at all. These are just the way people respond, or the way people behave. It's that people with antisocial personality disorder, which frankly is what used to be called evil before people started seeing it in like a psychological, you know, thing. They do it naturally. They don't, it's the reason we see it evil is because evil people are more apt to do it, because they don't have the restraints the way the rest of us do. And you've probably seen this in your own career. You'll see a consultant who you listen to their ideas, and their ideas are 10 times better than some of the big stars, some of the big gurus. Their ideas are measurable, they're practical, they can be used, they're groundbreaking, and they don't have anywhere near as big an audience, because they say, my ideas should speak from themselves. I don't feel very comfortable getting attention. I don't know, it shouldn't be that way. I shouldn't have to do that. And then you'll see a Simon Sinek, who his ideas are perfectly fine, but this infinite game idea he had, there's another academic book that says the exact same thing. He just took it and made it his own. You know what I mean? He's such a good self-promoter that he just can do it. So I'm not saying he's a narcissist or anything. I'm just saying the best of the best don't do this stuff. So it became very clear to me that I can't allow the worst people to have a monopoly on hype. I need to give this weapon to the people who don't naturally come to it. And I was one of them. I'm not a natural hype artist at all. I was terrible at sales when I started my career. You know, I had to learn it like a student. So to me, it's your moral imperative to master this stuff. And I know that sounds self-serving, but it's really not. I mean, I really believe that the bad guys are going to do it anyway. what you need to do to put safeguards in is you need a moral code. So my moral code is I will never deceive. I don't tell mistruths, and I will never use this stuff to get someone to do something that they wouldn't do, you know, that wouldn't be good for them, that they wouldn't do if, you know, that they'd be averse to doing otherwise, right? So those are my moral guardrails, and I filter everything through that.
This is very reminiscent for me to using NLP, which is neuro-linguistic programming. NLP is a study and a collective of strategies that help, when used for good, right? So back to the moral code, to help someone move from where they are to somewhere else. And, you know, the NLP practitioner helps them to get there by, you know, sometimes getting them into a, you know, some of the guided visualization and trance-like movements. And so that's a very manipulating their state into somewhere else. And, you know, so when I went through NLP training, we same, just as you just described, you know, let's make sure the moral compass is really clear, because these are techniques that in the wrong hands or with the wrong motivation, you can end up getting someone to do something against their will, as opposed to something that, So, you know, of course, you know, I end up using it with business leaders or people who are stuck and they are declaring where they want to go.
Exactly.
And then it's like, okay, well, let me see what I can do to help you get there. And then they're free of something that was holding them back as a result. That's good. You know, there's, you hear of NLP, you are a copywriter. So NLP in copywriting, you know, embedded commands to get them to buy something that they don't want would be an example of a not so moral use of the same tool. So
exactly. Yeah.
Very, very similar and really, really interesting.
And I should also say, you know how when you get really drunk and you tell and you pour your heart out to someone, you weren't hypnotized. If you didn't really on some level want to tell them all that stuff, you know, you're with someone that you had a crush on and you start pouring out all that stuff. If you didn't like the person, you wouldn't have said it, right? Mm-hmm. And then the next day you can say, oh, I was drunk, et cetera, et cetera. It's more like it removes the inhibitions. So this hype stuff isn't like it's not trance. I mean, that's, I know an NLP word, but this isn't like brainwashing where there are those circles spinning in your eyes. It's, it's getting us into, it's just taking advantage of dynamics that happen every single day anyway. When people go to a rock concert, you know, they lose themselves in the crowd, for example, right? So this isn't like you can get people who have no inclination to do what you want them to do to just like be brainwashed and hypnotized and follow you like a zombie. That's not how this stuff works.
Yeah, no, that's right, right.
You know, people want to eat chocolate because it's tasty, or they want to drink sugar water. So Coke and Hershey, you know, play on that. But if it tasted terrible, it wouldn't work.
Mm. Right, right. You know, so one of the things that I'm thinking about here is, you know, how can we use these principles deliberately? You know, so here we are with our businesses and we're trying to, you know, get our top line sales up. We want more customers. We want to influence positively more people, which then spreads the word, et cetera. And it's this big positive cycle. And you have a story of Richard Branson, who's a master at this, and his balloon ride across the Atlantic. Yeah. And, you know, the whole phenomenon about, you know, he being with the partner who invited him on the trip to be the first, the reason that we know that he is the first is he made sure he was the first.
Exactly.
So say more about that.
You know, Richard Branson is an example of a figure that I call in the book and in general, the magus, which is an old word for that magician comes from. But what it meant, it was this wizard-like person in ancient Persia who had the answers to everything. And they're sort of separate from the fray. And so Richard Branson frames himself as an extraordinary human being, right? So Yeah, he did this hot air balloon ride across the ocean, and it was amazing. I'm not taking anything away from him. He was the first, I believe, to, I don't know the, I forget the exact terms, forgive me, but it was cross the Atlantic or cross the Atlantic in a certain period of time or something like that. And he did it, and he almost got killed in the process. But it wasn't like he just did this for his own personal edification and fun. He built it up in the media for weeks and weeks in advance. He had boats and airplanes following, news crews, people posted on both shores, you know, a big branded thing, Virgin on the balloon. And it was around the time that he was launching his airline. And they're both aeronautic ventures, right? So, you know, the guy lives on an island. He's been rarely in the ranks of billionaires. He's been happily married for like 50 years. But he has pictures of himself taken with a naked supermodel on his back while he's jet skiing near his island. So he and you know, so he is embodying this life that you want to live, because the Virgin brand is about fun. You go on one of their airplanes and it's like a fun experience. Mm-hmm. So does that mean that you have to buy an island and do hot air balloons? No, it doesn't. In fact, what I often tell people is, if you want to turn yourself into a magus, which is one of the hype strategies that I tout, the best way to do it is to write down and think deeply about your weaknesses and insecurities. Because a lot of other people, a lot of times we try to will ourselves into to being better, you know, follow your strengths and you know, and where you have weaknesses, turn them into strengths and have discipline and have willpower. And you hear a lot now about building great habits. But then you have the same great habits as everybody else. Everyone's waking up at 5:30, right? And drinking green tea instead of coffee and, you know, doing Peloton, right? But it's those insecurities and weaknesses. If you can flip those into a strength, that's where the cool, weird stuff that makes you different is. So, I mean, to give you an example, Edison, a lot, again, he was a great inventor in a lot of ways, but a lot of the inventions that he's credited for, really, his main invention was his main two inventions were the research laboratory. He was the first laboratory to have a professional laboratory to have a staff of people, industrial research laboratory, to have industrial research being done and then turning that into products and crediting it to one guy. That was his invention, and modern celebrity. So the thing about Edison was he didn't really invent the light bulb. He couldn't figure out a way to get it to go past a small area of lower Manhattan. He did invent the phonograph, but he couldn't commercialize it for 15 years. One of his workmen invented the movie camera, and he was off doing some failed mining equipment thing. So what he would do is he didn't like people very much. He was partially deaf and he was kind of cantankerous. So it was difficult for him to talk to people. And at the time, the man of science, and I say man because that's what they called it at the time, was someone who kind of like thought in a leisurely way. Charles Darwin, he was an aristocrat and he would walk around his grounds and he would only work 3 hours and come up with these brilliant ideas. Edison, though, didn't, you know, he knew he needed press, but he was really cantankerous, didn't like talking to people, didn't like schmoozing, didn't like anything really rather than sitting in his lab alone. And so what he would do is he fetishized the fact that he worked like a dog. So he had a punch clock installed in his lab that wasn't for his employees. It was for him. And he would make sure that the press was there to report on it. You know, venture capitalists would come and he needed their money. But instead of schmoozing with them, he would have his assistants. And, you know, Mr. Edison would talk to you, but he's deep. He's in the middle of a breakthrough. He's been working for 14 hours straight. You know, he can't be disturbed right now. And then he didn't have to talk to them, right? And the press would come out. So what I would recommend is figure out what's weird, uncomfortable, that you don't feel good about. And then what's that hidden strength in there? And you'll be that you don't have to fake. And you can really turn yourself into this figure that's worth talking about.
Mm. That's a wonderful way to look at it. And you could just imagine, I love that, you know, he's too busy right now. He's,
you know, what do you even do?
Yeah, and especially if you have a track record of having created anything, which he certainly did, yeah. Whether or not, as you just pointed out, they were his or someone on his teams or some other way that he got there. But you know, it's like the back to remember Happy Days and Fonzie and little Richie Cunningham, who was about to get in a fight, and Fonz says, "Well, just, you know, talk mean, right?" So he talking mean and you got punched in the face. Like, yeah. Oh, well, you have to have this reputation.
You got to be the Fonz, you know? Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Anyways, so just as a way to wrap up this conversation, you know, the idea of hype and how to, you know, go beyond what you may already be doing as a business leader, as an entrepreneur in your business, et cetera. You know, if there's one last bit of advice, what would that be?
Let me know if this is what you have in mind, but the way I see it is there are these fairly limited number of ways that human beings behave typically in groups. And I wouldn't have written this book if I didn't think people should know what they are. Mm-hmm. But in the midst of them, there are nearly an infinite number of combinations for executing them. So the way to do that is to, as long as you're working with human nature, not against human nature, you should be always conducting small bets and eliminating them as quickly as possible, and take the mind of a scientist. So let's say picking fights is something that you agree is a strategy that would help you. There's a million ways you can pick fights. So you can write just one article picking a fight with a dominant figure in your industry and see what happens. Mm-hmm. You can do a video channel where you're calling out, you know, the bad ideas that you find online. You can stand on a street corner, on a busy commercial street corner in Silicon Valley with a sandwich board, right? You know, and see if people will take your conversation. Not that that's how you're going to make your living, but maybe that crazy, crazy, crazy idea will lead to something that no one ever thought of because no one else is standing out there with the sandwich board, right? So I would say having this spirit of experimentation and considering whatever data you get as a positive and being ruthless about eliminating what doesn't work and being ruthless about doing more of what does, as long as you're playing under the rules of human nature, that's where the really great ideas for self-promotion happen and come.
Well, and we're back to the idea of life is a series of experiments. Figure out what works. Do more of that.
Very true. But don't let your experiments sink you. What I sometimes see people do is they really do put all of their eggs in one basket. They don't think they're doing that, but to them, an experiment is starting a new business, you know, and raising $2 million and going all in. And then if they fail, well, that's, you know, business people fail, entrepreneurs fail. Well, no, that's a big failure. That's because it prevents you from doing other experiments.
Right.
And
right.
It takes a lot of time. You want to do the smallest experiment you can possibly do to get data on whether you should proceed. Mm.
And then once you have evidence that it's working, turn up the volume.
Yeah. And what you think will work will probably not work. And what you think won't work probably will. This hype idea that I have, which I built my entire career on, I didn't set out to do that. I was going to be a writer of telecom and call center white papers. That was my big idea because that was something I knew about. And there was a niche, but I wrote this one article because I needed an article one week, which took me 3 hours to do, the Gary Vaynerchuk thing, and it outperformed my other article. So after that, I wrote about hype men, how hip hop always talks about hype instead of marketing, and that blew up. So I said, well, maybe there's something here. So then right. I put more into it and more into it. The idea, the best idea will almost always come from small experiments. It will almost never come from intense planning and intense financing and all of that.
Well, and certainly the word hype sounds more exciting than call center white paper.
And it is.
And it is. Well, let's finish up. I just want to say, Mike, I really enjoyed the conversation. The book itself is just... it is beautifully written in a way that, it's a fun read with tons of examples. And as I pointed out, names of people you will know and probably don't know, but you really pull it all together nicely.
That means a lot. Thank you very much.
Yeah, you're welcome. So this is Michael F. Shine, Michael F. Shine from Microfame Media and, author extraordinaire. Thank you for being with us today. And I hope you have a great day and can't wait to see what happens after this hype book.
Oh, and can I give one little plug?
Please do.
You know, the one piece of actual marketing advice I heard that I really like a lot is that you shouldn't have one, more than one ask or one call to action. So I could come here and like tell you to, you know, try our business out, a million other things, but just go on Amazon and buy the Hype Handbook. You know, if you want to learn all the stuff that, you know, I talk about, I've really tried to, as you said, put everything into that kitchen sink. So, yeah, I would love it if you check that out.
Yes. And I'll just endorse it right here. It is absolutely worth it. So thank you again, Mike. All right, everyone, take care. Business Results Radio wrapping up for today, and we'll catch you on the next episode.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Business Results Radio. Remember to share this episode on social media or directly with people you think would benefit from it. And if you are willing, subscribe to this podcast and give us a 5-star rating. Go ahead and do that now while you're thinking. I also want to invite you to visit businessresultsradio.com. And if you want to learn more about the Wynn Enterprises team or about the business consulting and mentoring services we provide, visit completebusinesstransformation.com. Thanks a bunch, and we will catch you again soon.